from, and it comes from quantum field theory. However, well, we don't have a statement of the theorem yet, so we cannot start proving it. Yet, the theorem is about constructing a certain class of knot invariants at the end. It amounts to constructing some knot invariants. So let me tell you about the simplest invariant of that type, and we can construct it already today, and it will be useful. It will be used on again and again when we do the more complicated things. Okay? And the simplest one is actually absolutely simple, though you'll find some lovely formulas for it towards the end of the hour. Things you wouldn't have expected, perhaps. Okay? So, I'm basically just going to talk today about the linking number. Okay? So, the linking number is not a knot invariant, but a link invariant. So, a two-component link, as opposed to a single-component knot, will be a pair of maps, gamma 1 from the circle into R3, gamma 2 from the circle into R3, so that each of them is an embedding, so both are embeddings, with disjoint images. And of course, all of this is taken modulo homotopies of such things. And the same warning as last time applies. So it's not any embedding, but C infinity embedding. In fact, C1 suffices. And it's not all homotopies, but C infinity homotopies, and again, C1 suffices.
Gamma 2 is from circle, not sphere, right?
Sorry. I was just sort of got carried by the indexing. So, examples. Okay, and by the way, if you wanted a 5-component link, it will go up to 5 here. Okay? Same definition. Okay? So, examples. So, the unlink, I don't know, what should I call it? The unlink with two components, perhaps? U for unlink, for un, and 2 for two components. So, basically, this is this one. So, gamma 1, gamma 2, I don't need to say more. And second is the positive Hopf link. And the positive Hopf link is, maybe I'll call it H. So, it is basically two rings connected with each other in this way. And what does positivity means? It means that both crossings here should be positive. So what's a positive crossing? I have to tell you what are signs for crossings. Okay? So if you have a crossing, there is a way to... So remember, everything is always oriented. So this is an oriented circle inside an oriented R3. Okay? So I know which direction the flow goes on each of the two strands, and also I know which hand is my right hand when I look at it. Okay? So if when I hold a crossing with my right hand so that my thumb is pointing, sorry, when I hold one of the strands with my right hand so that my thumb is pointing in the direction of the flow, then my fingers show how the other strand rotates around it, then I call it a positive crossing. Okay? So again, a positive crossing is a crossing so that when I hold it, when I hold it with my right hand, with my thumb pointing in the direction of the flow, the fingers indicate the flow of the other strand. So this is a plus crossing, and alternatively, if if I hold it with my right hand, the fingers point opposite to the direction of the flow of the other strand, or alternatively, if I hold it with my left hand, I get it right, then it will call a negative crossing. And in general, I will say, I will call this the sign of a crossing, and I should say that crossing is the correct English spelling of the word crossing in this class. Okay? Anyway, so why is this one positive? You see, if I orient both components counterclockwise, so I guess the knot isn't specified until I've specified its orientation. So when oriented when both are oriented so that in the plane as pictured on this blackboard it looks counterclockwise, then both crossings here are positive. Let's see. Yeah, I think so. So this is the positive hop flink. There is likewise a negative hop flink. You know what? Maybe I'll call it H plus, and likewise there is an H minus, and H minus looks like this, I suppose. Okay? Good. So I told you what the link is, and now let me tell you what is the linking number of a two-component knot, link, and I'm going to give about five formulas for it.
The same knots.
What?
Yeah, you drew the same link.
I drew the same one? Oops, sorry, so it should be the opposite. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so the linking number is, so first of all, I choose a diagram for the link. What's a diagram for the link? It's the same as a diagram, the same definition as a diagram for a knot, except that when you kind of trace it, you should be getting two circles rather than one. Okay? So I pick a diagram for the link. And then I consider one half the sum over all crossings X in this diagram D. So first of all, I suppose I pick a diagram D. For the link gamma 1, gamma 2. So it's the sum over all crossings in D between, so I only regard crossings that involve the two components. I do not, I ignore crossings in which one component crosses itself or another, or the other one crosses itself. So between gamma 1 and gamma 2, so not gamma 1 and gamma 1, or gamma 2 and gamma 2. And for each such crossing, I just take the sign of that crossing, minus 1 to the crossing. Okay? So, examples. What is the linking number of the unlink? Well, there are zero crossings. Both of them are, all of them are positive, but anyway, the sum is zero. The linking number of the positive hop flink is, so both crossings here are positive, so I get, the sum is 2 divided by 2, I get 1, so I get 1, and the negative hop flink will get, give me minus 1. The moment I know that this is an invariant, I will prove that these three are all different from each other. I still don't know that it's an invariant. So proof of invariants. So I guess there is a, well, okay, the proof I really care about for invariants will come later. And it will come directly from this definition. So I will give you a formula for the answer, which depends only on a C-infinity embedding, not on a projection to the plane. And I will show that it is invariant under C-infinity homotopies. So a proof later will be better. The proof that I will show later, in some sense, will be better. But the currently, I'm giving a proof in terms, I'm giving a definition in terms of diagrams. So I'll give a proof in terms of diagrams. And I'll use the Rademeister theorem. Last time it was formulated for knots. I think it's obvious how to extend it to links. And I assert that it's equally true for links, even though I haven't even proven it for knots. Okay? So proof of invariants. I suppose I have to check invariants under Rademeister 1. So I have to check that if I do a Rademeister 1 somewhere, the value of the linking number doesn't change. Well, what could change? The only crossing that changes is this one. So that's the only potential change. But this is a crossing between a component and itself, and it doesn't count. And on the right, it just isn't. So you get the same. So this one doesn't count as it involves only one component. Okay. Next, so this was Rademeister 1. Next, I have to check invariants under Rademeister 2. So Rademeister 2 is whether this has the same value as that. Well, the value here will be 0. Or more precisely, the contribution to the value from the part of the diagram drawn is 0. Right? There may be more things outside. But the contribution here is 0. The contribution here, well, it depends. If the two belong to the same component, the contribution is automatically 0. Well, that's good enough. If the two belong to different components, then I suppose I have to be careful about how they are oriented. Let's pretend they're oriented this way. If you look at it, now this will be a positive crossing and this will be a negative crossing. So the overall contribution will again be 0. And you can check that for all other, if you reverse any of the orientations, both signs will switch at the same time. Okay? So at any case, you get 0 on the right, 0 on the left, and we're good. And then the last thing to check is Rademeister 3. Rademeister 3 looks the scariest and is often the easiest. Not always, though. So what does Rademeister 3 look like? So if you have a line below, you can turn it to a line above. Okay? So the point here is that really there is a bijection between the three crossings that appear here and the three crossings that appear here. Namely, let S1 be the sign of the crossing of the backslash over slash crossing. The backslash over here is this one, so it's the one kind of antipodal to that one in the opposite direction. But it will have the same sign because these two lines retain their orientations when I go from here to here. And if neither counts because both sides belong to the same component, then neither will count over here just as well. Okay? Likewise, the sign, the contribution from this, from S2 here is the same as the contribution from S2 here, and S3 is the same as S3, so the overall contributions are the same, and we're done with the proof of the theorem. Okay? So, a minor comment. So, comment In fact, this is slightly more general than what I've indicated. In fact, I never needed to know that each of gamma 1 and gamma 2 was an embedding. I only needed to know that their images were disjoint. Okay? So, comment, this, right, because crossings between gamma 1 and gamma 2 simply don't count. Okay? So, comment, this generalizes to invariance under so-called link homotopy, okay, where which means that in homotopies, components are allowed to cross themselves, but not each other. Okay? So, by the way, so again, just for fun, here is a lovely example. There is the following knot. So you do the following thing, the following link. Okay, so there are two components here, and I haven't proven it, but this is actually genuinely linked. It takes some effort to prove. We don't have the tools right now. This is actually genuinely linked. Yet, under link homotopy, it is trivial, because if I could let the second component cross itself, I could open it up here, and then the two will slide away from each other. Okay? So therefore, the linking number of these two components must be zero, the same as the linking number of the anot. And indeed it is. Indeed it is, because you can check that suppose the orientations are such that this crossing is positive, well, here I go the same in the same place in the opposite direction, so this one will be negative, and likewise, well, I don't know, these two will be of opposite signs, and therefore overall will have zero linking number. This is, by the way, the so-called Whitehead link, and maybe I will sometimes call it W. I don't know. Okay. So, so that was first definition, and let me give you the second definition. So, I guess this will be definition two. So, given gamma 1 and gamma 2, I can construct a map, which I will call phi, going from the torus, the two-dimensional torus, where the two-dimensional torus is simply, well, the product of a circle with a circle, and my convention will be that often when I'll talk about a space, I will also put as an underscript the name of a coordinate for that space. So the coordinate here will be called S1, and the coordinate here will be called S2. Sorry for the confusion here, but this is uppercase S and this is lowercase S. Okay? So I will construct a map from here into S2. Well, the map is the following. First of all, in words or in a picture, well, if you have 2 points in S1, I will use the link to think of them as 2 points in R3. right? So I have one point in R3 and another point in R3. And then I have the direction from which one point sees the other. That's a non-zero vector in R3 because I assumed that the images were disjoint. So normalize it to be of unit length, and then you get an element in S2. Let me write it as a formula. So phi of S1 comma S2 is gamma 1 of S1 minus gamma 2 of S2 divided by the norm of that thing. Okay? Now, take omega, or let omega be volume form on S2, which I suppose means two things. It's first of all, it's an element of the space of two forms on S2, and I want it to be invariant under rotations. So, therefore, its value at one place determines the value at all other places. Therefore, there is only one dimensional space of such forms. And then the second condition is that I want the volume to be 1. So I want the integral on S2 of omega to be 1. You see, the course is somehow, the big tool in this class is a Stokes' theorem. So we're already starting to see where it will come up. Okay? So now, if I have a form here, I can pull it back to a form here and integrate it. So the second definition will be that the linking number of gamma 1 and gamma 2 is defined to be the integral over S1 cross S1, meaning over the torus, of the pullback via phi of omega. Maybe I will call it the set L sub 2 for this being the second definition. Okay? So, maybe I'll prove a few things about it. Maybe first of all I'll compute it. So, first of all, let's do some computations. So, let's compute the second linking number of the R0. Okay? So, let's embed. Okay, first of all, this is a computation assuming invariance. Assuming invariance. Okay, the invariance I will prove in a minute, but okay. So I may choose to embed these two circles in the plane. Therefore, the map phi will always map these two circles just to the equator, the torus here, just to the equator, right? Because the direction vector from a point here to a point here is always in the plane. So the image will be in the equator. And, you know, one property of integration is that the integral of a form via a pullback is equal to the, well, you push forward the domain and integrate it in the target space. Okay? Now, if you push forward these two to here, if you push forward these two circles to here, the image of the torus will collapse to the equator, and the volume of the equator is 0. Okay? So, this is 0. Now, let's compute L2 of something that isn't quite a knot. So let's compute L2 of, I guess this is a negative crossing, so of a positive crossing. So what I mean by that is take two lines, straight lines, extend them to infinity, make them be, well, in fact, it doesn't matter how far apart they are, and use the same definition. So what will you get? So I suppose what I want is to look at all possible arrows from here to here and see where they land on the sphere. All possible vectors going from one to the other and see where they land in the sphere. Okay? Well, obviously, well, since I'm taking this one to be the first component and this one to be the second, in fact, I'm taking, I think, this one to be gamma 1 and this one to be gamma 2, and the way I wrote it, it's the vector going from the direct from gamma 2 to gamma 1, so it's going from below to above, so it will always be in the upper hemisphere. But I claim that you get everything in the upper hemisphere, and anything in the upper hemisphere you get exactly once. Okay? So the map from configuration spaces, the configuration space of two points, one on this line and one on this one, to the sphere will cover exactly the upper hemisphere and exactly once. Why? So I already told you that you always get to the upper hemisphere. Now let's see that you get every point in the upper hemisphere. So, think of the... So here are the two components. And I suppose they should be roughly in the plane of the... Of this desk. So, the vector between them is going to point in some direction in heavens, where heavens is sort of the night sky above us. So instead of looking in the direction of heavens, let's look from heavens at the knot. It's completely clear that from any direction we would be looking at a pair of straight lines, they will cross. Furthermore, they will cross exactly once. And if they cross from a certain direction, that exactly means that a line between the two, from one point on another, on one to one point on the other, is pointing to that direction in heavens. QED. Okay? So, the conclusion is that the image of phi is upper hemisphere. The integral of the volume form on the upper hemisphere is half the integral of the, well, it's basically one half. Okay? Now, suppose you are trying to compute L2 of the positive Hopf link. So, this is L2 of, this picture. So, what I'll do is I'll flatten this picture so that the vertical distance between these two lines is epsilon, is tiny. Then the contribution from vectors which aren't in the vicinity of the crossings, well, such vectors will have directions that are always almost on the equator. So when epsilon goes to zero, the contribution from such vectors will be just the area of a tiny band around the equator, which can be made as tiny as I want, so these will not contribute. And then the bulk of the contribution will be coming from vectors going either this way or the other way. Okay? And from the perspective of vectors around here, you're either seeing this or the opposite. Okay? And the, you can check the signs, and positive crossings will give you plus one half, negative crossings will give you minus one half, and overall, you'll get a one half for each crossing, which is a plus minus one half for each crossing, which agree with the previous definition, so this will be one, and in general, we've proven equality. Okay? Good. But you see, I now need to show you more, so let me prove invariance. Okay, so proof of invariance. So now, assume that instead of having just one gamma 1 and one gamma 2, I have a one parameter family of gamma 1s and gamma 2s. So I have gamma 1 up t and gamma 2 up t, and they are disjoint for all values of t between 0 and 1. Okay? So I get a map which I will again call phi, or maybe I can call it phi, phi tilde. Okay? So phi tilde will be a map from the map from S1 cross S1 cross the unit interval to S2, and it will be simply the sort of the viewing direction map at time t. Okay? So it will be, phi tilde of S1, S2, and t will be gamma 1 at time t evaluated at point S1 minus gamma 2 at time t evaluated at point S1 divided by the norm of that. Okay? And now look at the following. I'll just erase everything. Oh, you know what? Maybe I'll add a little picture. So this really looks like a torus cross an interval, and it maps into S2. Okay, I guess looks like a sphere. Okay, so let me consider the following. Consider the integral over this shape, so t cross the interval of the differential of phi tilde star of omega. So I still have a two form over here. I pull it to here, it becomes a two form over here. And that's a three-dimensional space. So d of it is a three form, and I can integrate a three form on a two-dimensional space. So on one, so this makes sense. Now, on one hand, this is equal to the, so pulling back commutes with the exterior derivative. So on one hand, this is the integral over the same space of phi tilde pullback of d omega. But you see, omega was a two form on a two-dimensional space. Its d is necessarily zero. There are no three forms on two-dimensional spaces. So this is the integral of zero, which is zero. On the other hand, by Stokes' theorem, first time we use it and definitely not the last, this is the integral over the boundary of the torus cross the interval of the pullback of omega, just remove the d, okay? And this is, well, the boundary of the torus cross the interval has two components. It has the left boundary and the right boundary. Without being committed to signs, let's pretend that the first one comes with positive, negative sign, and the second one with positive sign. Okay? So this is negative times the integral over t cross 0, but over the torus cross 0, this is simply the old phi sub 0 pullback of omega plus the integral over t cross 1 of phi at time 1 pullback of omega. So this is the linking number L2 of, or negative the linking number L2 of gamma 1 0, gamma 2 0. This is the linking number L2 of gamma 1 at time 1 with gamma 2 at time 1, and hence the two are equal, and invariance is proven. Okay? You with me? So in fact, we have now given a proof of invariance also of the combinatorial formula without ever using Rademeister's theorem. And in generally speaking, later Stokes' theorem will always replace the combinatorics. Okay, I guess I want a few more minor comments. So, comment C, nothing really depended on the fact that omega was a volume form. So in fact, if omega prime is an element of, is a two-form on the sphere, I could make this a similar definition with omega prime. So I could define L2 prime of gamma 1 and gamma 2 to be the integral over the torus of the pullback via the same map as before, instead of over of omega, take omega prime. So I still want, though, that the volume, the overall volume will be 1. So I want the integral over S2 of omega prime to still be 1. Okay? So the claim is that this didn't matter. So claim the integral, sorry, claim L2 prime is equal to L2. Proof. So, well, in fancy language, I will say that the second cohomology, the RAM of S2 is the real numbers, is one-dimensional. Okay? So if you have two things that that pair with S2 to give the same answer, they must be cohomologous. Therefore, the difference must be exact. Okay, this is in fancy language. In simpler language, it's just the statement that if two forms have the same integral, they differ by d of a one form. Okay? So, in any case, this implies that there exists lambda, which is a one form on S2, such that omega minus omega prime is equal to d lambda. And then the integral of the pullback of d lambda, on one hand, being the integral of a d on a space with no boundary, so by Stokes' theorem, it's equal to 0. On the other hand, it's the integral of the pullback of omega minus the integral of the pullback of omega prime. Right, everything here is over the torus. So the moral is what I wanted. Okay, so this is L2 minus L2 prime. Okay, so this concludes the proof, but by the way, this implies the following. I could have chosen the form omega prime to be nearly a delta function form, so take a form that is supported near the North Pole. So the whole, well, basically the form is zero except in a small neighborhood of the North Pole, and the integral over that small neighborhood is one. That's equally good, okay? Now, when I look at the two crossings, let me say it this way. Now, when I compute L using omega prime of gamma 1 and gamma 2, this will be, again, a sum over crossings X in a diagram D. So, assuming that gamma 1, gamma 2 projects to a legitimate diagram D. So, again, by the same reasoning, the only way you can have any support to the integral is from the places where the direction vector is nearly vertical, going towards the North Pole, so it will be a sum over crossings. But this time it will be crossings in which gamma 2 is above gamma 1. The crossings in which gamma 1 is below gamma 2 don't count. Okay? And again, it will be the sign of the crossing. So, you know, it's half the amount of work of before. We only need to count half the crossings, roughly speaking, and we don't need to divide by 2. Okay? Next, so the last thing is that I can make it a completely explicit formula. Oh, I ran out of time. The prettiest things I didn't say. So, so I guess it's point D for this version, for this part. So, I can take an explicit omega. So consider S2 as living inside R3, whose coordinates are x, y, and z. And then, if you want a two-form on R3, which is invariant under rotations, the easiest way to write one is to write xy dy wedge dz, sorry, x times dy wedge dz, plus cyclic permutations of that. So y d z wedge dx plus z dx wedge dy, and then restrict this two form to S2 and it will still be invariant. I suppose I have to compute its integral. So let's compute the integral of omega, well, on S2. Maybe I will call it omega sub 1 for, let's call it omega sub c, and put here a constant c. Okay? Or you know what? Let's just compute the integral of omega c. Okay? Then this is the integral over the three-dimensional ball, again by Stokes' theorem, of d omega c. D of omega c, well, d of the first part, sorry, c multiplies everything. So d of the first part is just dx dy dz. Also, the second part is dx dy dz, I mean, if you permute the d's. And also the third, so this is 3 times c times the integral over the ball of dx dy dz, which is just the volume of the ball, which is, so this is 3c 4 over 3, wait, what's the volume of the ball?
4/3 pi.
Pi, 4 3 pi, 4/3 pi. So I guess this cancels and you get c times 4 pi. So the conclusion is that it's best to take omega to be omega of 1 over 4 pi, which just means 1 over 4 pi is times this, and this will give you an explicit volume form on S2. Okay? And then you can check that, oh, and then an alternative way of writing it, so omega will be 1 over 8 pi, and then let me use physics language, so epsilon ijk dxi dxj dxk, where now I'm switching to coordinates x1, x2, x3. I suppose I forgot the wedges. Epsilon ijk is the totally antisymmetric tensor. So epsilon ijk is equal to minus 1 to the permutation ijk, if ijk form a permutation, so if ijk is a permutation, and 0 otherwise. And then this is clearly the same as that, right? In the permutation group, there are six elements, three of them are appearing here, and the other three account for the fact that I divided by 8 pi instead of 4 pi. Okay? So this is an alternative formula for omega, and then, you know, you can write the phi completely explicitly, you can write the pullback completely explicitly, and you'll get a completely explicit integral formula for the linking number. So it will come out, again, 1 over 4 pi for some reason, times the integral ds1 ds2 of gamma 1 dot the ith direction times at s1, gamma 2 dot in the j's direction at s2, times the vector between them, so gamma 1 k minus gamma 2 k, divided by the norm of the vector between them raised to the third power. This is just by explicitly pulling back this specific one form to R3. So you get to the torus. So you get an explicit formula. And I'll have to continue next time.
Is that with an epsilon ijk?
Oh, I forgot the epsilon ijk, of course. Where should I put it? I guess here. Epsilon ijk, yes. So, you know, if I had more time, what I eventually want to come to is to tell you that the loveliest formula is that, you see, you can look at the exterior derivative d, and in some sense it has an inverse, I will explain, and this is really, the linking number is really a matrix element of the inverse, so it's gamma 1 d inverse gamma 2, but I'll talk about it later. So it's really just the entries of the inverse of the exterior derivative. So this will be next Wednesday, and see you on Friday.